So now, beloved brothers and sisters, we'd like to bring on our imam, our leader, the leader for the day, the leader for our nation, the leadership that the world is looking for. I'll bring to you at this time our imam, Warisuddin Muhammad.
Takbir! Takbir!
Thank you, Brother Imam Bashir. To all of the honorable people who have worked hard to make it possible for us to be here on this campus, we'd like to say thank you. I would like to extend the greetings, the Muslim greetings, to all of you. Greetings of peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. We have, as you know, our own way of understanding American people and the challenges that all of us have to face as Americans. And we have our own way of looking at ourselves too, and our responsibility as citizens, and also as our responsibility as members of our race, and as citizens, the members in the community in which we live, the neighborhood in which we live. We have a plan that we feel means success, that will bring success to us and will mean lasting success. We have grown with this country, as you know, but we're still struggling for that lasting success, for achievements that won't be taken away. And we feel, as Muslims, that we have a plan, a program, to help assure us that we won't have progress taken away by some turn of event. For example, like the change of government in Washington, D.C., from Democrat to one represented, headed by a Republican. Many of us, when that became a fact and we had to accept that a Republican was in the White House, many of us began to feel that our situation was very desperate. This mood just went through the black community, and ever since then there's been a hopelessness upon the African American people, it seems. I recall reading where two of our outstanding leaders, perhaps two of our greatest leaders, met, and they were discussing the situation, and they even shed tears over the state of the African American people. This was printed in a newspaper, and pictures of them seated and seen that they were sobbing. So many times we've seen progress taken away from us. And I wonder if we are really dealing with the problem as we should. We have had great efforts by great leaders, great men, great women, efforts to unite us, efforts to unite our efforts, our energies, direct those energies in a very constructive way to prevent progress from being taken away by some unforeseeable circumstance. But we know the great movement of the black nationalists and of the civil rights people have not been enough to establish us. We have had the great days of the civil rights movement and also the great days of the black nationalist movement. And still, we are not situated comparably or not even appreciably. We don't appreciate our situation today. Most of us feel that it's worse off, or we are worse off today than we were perhaps 30 years ago. And that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be. We have made mistakes. We have had great ideas, great hopes. We've had courage, great courage. And we have accomplished a lot. And we shouldn't give up so quick on things that work for us just because we're set back a bit. I hear that pretty soon there's going to be a demonstration in Washington. But the desire among civil rights leaders to stimulate that kind of activity again is strong. And I hear that there's going to be a demonstration in Washington, D.C. They're hoping to have thousands of people there to protest the job plight of African-American people, the job situation for African-American people, especially for the youth in that, of our race. And as you perhaps are aware, we are making efforts now to do something about our material situation. We have begun to form committees and invite persons in our community with skills, a profession, with something to offer to come together, insurance men, businessmen, the artists, all of them, those in the performing arts, all of them, to come together and see what can we do to improve the situation. We've had several seminars now in different locations of the United States, and we see that we are making progress. For me, this is not a new effort. In fact, for me, it's not even the regeneration or the rebirth of the effort. For me, it's just the right time to do these things. And for me, what seemed to be behind us, a period of inactivity, for me, is not a period of inactivity at all, but a necessary period for us to recoup our senses and get back into the field to do work, you see? So we have to see it that way, and don't think because there's a period of inactivity that indicates some defect or some retreat from the work. It doesn't necessarily have to indicate that. Often we have to step back in order to go forward. And when you see that you have verged away from the central concern, and you find yourself way out in left field somewhere, and you know you're off course, and you have to go back so you can get back on course. Morally speaking, spiritually speaking, the Nation of Islam got off course during the late 60s and early 70s. And I may say that the civil rights movement, the black movement in America, got off course. We got off course. And that's why we're in the situation we're in now. We haven't been able to hold the line. I believe all of us know where we should go. We know what we need. We sense what we should be about. We know our commitment to the race. And I'm sure most of us feel that we should honor that commitment. We know that we are not in America fighting a battle that's the battle of an individual. We know that our situation in America is a situation for the race. That's the reality, and all of us know that. I believe the American people can benefit greatly from a willingness on their part to accept the contribution of all Americans and not allow primitive fears or prejudices cause them to stand in the way of other Americans or to block other Americans who want to do something about the situation. And my conversations and association with representatives of the African American people, government people, politicians, religious leaders, and others, I sense in them a great fear. When we are talking about what we would like to do to improve the situation for the African Americans, I sense in them a great fear of us coming forward. They fear our coming forward. And I believe that fear is not only in the leaders of the African American people. I believe that fear is in the average African American. You know, it's natural to fear the unknown. And the Christian black, African American black, they don't know the Muslims like they know each other. So a lot of this can be excused. But if it's just jealousy, if it's just greed, if it's just a desire to keep Christians in the forefront, then that's ignorance on our part. If Christians can do more to improve the lot of our race, then Muslims should support Christians. And if Muslims can do more in a particular area to advance the cause of the people, then Christians should support Muslims. That's good sense. That's good sense. We shouldn't be jealous of each other. We shouldn't fear each other. And I don't think this is our heart. This is not our mind. I think we have been tricked. I think we have been manipulated into these pockets of division, into these positions of enemies, the war zone. I think we have been conditioned. I think we've been manipulated. If you look at the media, and you know we don't control the media, if you look at the media, you can see in the media a design to play up certain Negro types and to really ignore others and pretend they don't exist. This makes the white man comfortable. I'm talking about the dirty white man. There are all kind of white folks. I'm talking about the dirty white folks. This makes the white man comfortable. You see? And look at the great price we pay for our little petty, pettiness.
many blacks feel very comfortable with the situation the way it is. They know that we have competent representatives that never get a chance to really address our people, especially those who are suffering conditions that must be changed. They know it. And they know the press has not introduced those persons to the community. Press has not told the people the truth about what those people are doing. I just came from Chicago, and yesterday we saw a play on the Outer Drive at McCormick Place. Now that's no little small place off from the street, you see, or off from the main thoroughfare. That place is very obvious on the lake, McCormick Place.
We went and we saw the play by Oscar Brown called Nitty Gritty. And the attendance there was so poor until it almost made me cry. There was hardly no one there. Very few people there. Children, mostly children. Few grown up. When I saw the message of that play, I understood how come the people weren't there. But I still felt like crying, because that play is to help blacks. That man had the courage to put together a play to help black people solve their problem. And he had the courage to attack those who were responsible for the problem. He attacked the city of Chicago. He attacked the politicians. He attacks everybody that really have a share and responsibility for the plight of the youth in the city. And I said to myself, if we were together, if we supported what's best for us, there would be good attendance here. We wouldn't have to have the media to come out and endorse that play. Do you think the Jew could keep himself together and could continue to grow in this country if he had waited for the media to come out and endorse him and endorse what he wanted? That was a time when the Irish had a hell of a time getting recognition, freedom in this country. They were discriminated against. They were oppressed. They had to fight for their rights. A lot of us don't know that. But the history tells us that. They had to actually shed blood, lose life to establish their right in America, just like other white folks. I don't know if something wrong with us, something seriously wrong with us. We are being taken advantage of. Whites who plan, who think scientifically, who study our mind, our mental makeup, our behavioral makeup scientifically. Whites in government, whites in media, whites in religion, whites everywhere. They study us, and they don't study us just for the kicks, or just to know a black man. They study us to know how can they best take advantage of us. They study us to know how they can best progress their concern over our concern. But we don't study them that way. We don't even study ourselves that way. If we would study ourselves to know how can we best take advantage of our opportunity, how can we best advance ourselves despite or in spite of all of these problems we have. We don't even study ourselves that way. We are just in the habit of responding to the white man. If the white man say, I love you, we go home and rest. Hey, wasn't that sweet today? Did you hear what the white man said? He said he loved blacks. And we go home and sleep, we rest happy. We get up and we feel good. And we'll feel good for 4 years until a white man say he doesn't love blacks. You hear what that white man said? They starting that race thing up again. We have to stop responding to the white man and start being scientific, like the white man is scientific. Study our situation scientifically and plan scientifically to solve our problems, get ourselves out of the rut. Believe me, I represent a growth that was independent. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, our late leader and my father, he didn't look to the weather of the federal government or the White House to decide what he should do today. White House weather might have been cloudy, it might have been threatening, storms, that didn't bother him. He went out on his own plan. He went out with his own vision, and he went out following his own plan. And he didn't let what was happening in Washington change that. And look what he was able to do with poor people. Very poor people. And people who didn't have education. Most of the members of the Nation of Islam, Lost Foundation of Islam, as it was called properly, they didn't have education. Elementary school education, the majority. And then a small number, high school. And hardly no college graduates were among us until the late years, very late years, in the history of the Nation of Islam. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself never had more than 3 elementary school years in the South. Malcolm never graduated from college. He was only a high school graduate. He had no college education. The man that headed our school for 30 years almost, he was the principal of the school, James Shabazz in Chicago. He was not a high school graduate. But look what we were able to do. And some of you right now, you say, oh, isn't it a pity that they have lost all of that? And that's the Christian sentiment, right? Not the Muslims, the Christians. Christian blacks. Isn't it a shame that the Muslims have lost all of that? You saw us like giants. What was going for us that we don't find going for most blacks in this country? A sense of unity. Unity of heart, unity of mind, unity of purpose. And most of us don't have that anymore. The church contained our life, the life of many blacks, for a long time because of their strong belief and strong obedience to the church. But America came out with all of its perversions, all of its permissiveness, and just destroyed the order of the Christian life for the majority of black Americans. And now you don't have that central force in your life. Church now is just a pastime, or it's something that you put aside while you do your thing. And you go to it only on Sundays or holidays. But it's not dominating, it's not directing your life anymore. It's not deciding your morals anymore. That's what's most important. See, there was a time when Christianity, for most blacks, even those who didn't go to church, I know because I was a Muslim and I had a lot of experiences with Christians. And for most of our people, the church life, the Christian life, the Bible, belief in God as a Christian, was deciding their morals. And they may went far astray. They may drink, they may get drunk, they may do dirty things, they may even steal something. But there were, but if you would remind them that there is a God, remind them that they shouldn't do those things, and you came at them from a respect for God, you could easily bring them to their senses, and they would say, "Yeah, I know it's wrong, man. I know I shouldn't be doing this." But now you can't get blacks to admit that they're wrong. You appeal to their religious sense, and you don't get anywhere. And that's because America's leadership in religion, America's leadership for the culture, gave up, threw away the ring, and decided that crime is the best thing to hold you down with. That's a fact. They decided that giving your life to crime, giving your life to vulgarity, giving your life to vulgar music, giving your life to vulgar dances, giving your life to a life of crime, stick up, dope selling, hot goods, selling hot goods. They found that crime works better to hold blacks than the church or anything else. So they just let crime loose on us. Don't you remember the time when whites in this country wanted us to be morally thinking people? Don't you remember the time when they wanted blacks to go to church? I remember those days. I'm not 50 yet, almost. Not quite 50. I remember when whites wanted blacks to go to church, and they wanted blacks to think morally. But now, when you look at what's happening in the theater, what's happening in the movie houses, what's happening on television, what's happening in the media, you don't see that concern no more. It's no strong effort by white establishment to get blacks to respect the church or to get blacks to think morally. Instead, it seems that the effort is to invite blacks to just give up every kind of restraint and just live their life as they feel it, no matter how dirty or how low that is. Now, what I'm saying to you, this is intentional on the part of dirty white folks. And they catch us off guard because we don't have a direction for our life. We just depend upon the world to show us how we are to live. And if the world doesn't establish an authority for our life, we don't have one. In other words, we don't have black leadership. And when we had the Nation of Islam, the Lost Nation of Islam, we had that. We had a sense of independence. We had a sense of government. Now, I'm not talking about government in the sense that we ordinarily understand government. Isn't community life government? We support the government of the United States, and all civilized people will support a government. It's a necessity for progress, for security. And progress. It's a necessity. Government. Now we don't want to argue about that. We know that we have to have government. When there's no more government here, then we are vulnerable to attacks from everywhere, right? Oh yes. We won't know which boot will be on our neck. Right? If you don't have government. So we know the value of government for the nation. But we have to understand that community itself is government. And one thing good, beautiful about the Nation of Islam, Lost Foundation of Islam, as it was called, it instilled in us a sense of government and an appreciation for government. We had a leader. He was boss. Elijah Muhammad was boss. Anybody showed disrespect to that leader, they were in trouble. He was boss. He had his
men, his officers,
and they were all over.
They were ministers and captains
and lieutenants,
investigators, secretaries, national representatives and spokesmen, and all of these people.
And they enjoyed a sense of power because there was one boss.
If they didn't have that one boss that everybody respected,
they couldn't enjoy their sense of power.
Now, mister, what are you trying to do? You're trying to...